And I make one of my fans killed.
When we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life. The greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Hello everyone, welcome to the show. This is Bobby Elias, our show, Let's Create a Better World. I'm very excited today. We promise you a great statement and poem by this young lady that spoke at the UN summit in New York a little over 2 weeks ago. We're going to have that, play that poem and hear her statement. Then we're going to have Steve Hertz. He is a attorney for the Sierra Club, working on lots of major issues, climate changes. He's got some new programs on that. We're going to have him on in a minute. As soon as the poem is over, I want to get his reaction on that. Then if we have time later, I'm going to do some more commentary. This show is on every Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and we're also into healthy aging. Everyone's aging if you're over 27, so this includes a lot of people. We do a lot of body, mind, spirit, health, dance, exercise, yoga. We do the situations about what's going on in the world, how to live longer and be healthy. All right, let's get to our first guest for a few couple minutes here, and that is Steve Hertz. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi, Bobby. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Tell us about your title, what you do with the climate change, and then we're going to go into some questions.
Okay, great. So, as you said, I'm an attorney with the International Climate Program, and the Sierra Club International Climate Program works on a couple things. Internationally, we try and help move the international negotiations along, try and work for a just and ambitious outcome in the Framework Convention on Climate Change. And towards that end, we do a couple of things domestically as well. We try to push the U.S. government to act in bold ways and take on its responsibility internationally. And that includes putting forward a strong pledge for the international negotiations. And it also includes putting money on the table to help support developing countries to reduce their emissions and to adapt to the inevitable changes of climate change.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Bobby. I was just going to say we also work to try to limit public support for coal projects across the globe through international agencies like the World Bank and U.S. bilateral funding agencies like the U.S. Export-Import Bank.
Great, great. We're going to hear a video, a tape recording. It's going to be a statement and a poem in a few minutes by this young lady from the Marshall Islands. You've seen it on video, and the woman's only 26 years old, and it's just an incredible poem. People came to tears. I came to tears at the summit. Not only that, but she got a standing ovation, and this young woman's going to go places, and she did the poem to her daughter. Let me just tell our listeners that the UN summit was 2.5 weeks ago in New York City. There was a big protest and demonstration. Steve and I are going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about climate change. We're going to talk about what the Sierra Club is doing and a lot of positives, what we can do in this world to go to the title of the show, Let's Create a Better World. We're going to try to talk about what we can do and what you can do. All right, so if our engineer is ready, this tape was done on Tuesday, the 23rd of September at the UN Summit. The young lady wrote a poem to her daughter, a very young daughter, and she is really, really into this stuff. So our engineer, if you could play that, and then Steve and I are going to talk about it.
Yahweh Komodib, my family and I have traveled a long way to be here today, all the way from the Marshall Islands. The Marshall Islands encompasses more than 2 million square kilometers of ocean, and so it makes sense that our culture is one of voyaging and navigation. One of our most beloved legends features a canoe race between 10 brothers. Their mother, holding a heavy bundle, begged each of her sons for a ride on their canoe. But only the youngest listened and took her along for the ride, not knowing that his mother was carrying the first sail. With the sail, he won the race and became chief. The moral of the story is to honor your mother and the challenges life brings. Climate change is a challenge that few want to take on, but the price of inaction is so high. Those of us from Oceania are already experiencing it firsthand. We've seen waves crashing into our homes and our breadfruit trees wither from the salt and drought. We look at our children and wonder how they will know themselves or their culture should we lose our islands. Climate change affects not only us islanders, it threatens the entire world. To tackle it, we need a radical change of course. This isn't easy, I know. It means ending carbon pollution within my lifetime. It means supporting those of us most affected to prepare for unavoidable climate impacts. And it means taking responsibility for irreversible loss and damage caused by greenhouse gas emissions. The people who support this movement are Indigenous mothers like me, families like mine, and millions more, standing up for the changes needed and working to make them happen. I ask world leaders to take us all along on your ride. We won't slow you down. We'll help you win the most important race of all, the race to save humanity. I would now like to share with you a poem that I have written for my daughter, Matefele Benam. Dear Matefele Benam, you are a 7-month-old sunrise of gummy smiles. You are bald as an egg and bald as the Buddha. You are thighs that are thunder, shrieks that are lightning, so excited for bananas, hugs, and our morning walks along the lagoon. Dear Matefele Benam, I want to tell you about that lagoon, that lazy lounging lagoon, lounging against the sunrise. Men say that one day that lagoon will devour you. They say it will gnaw at the shoreline, chew at the roots of your breadfruit trees, gulp down rows of seawalls, and crunch through your island's shattered bones. They say you, your daughter, and your granddaughter too, will wander rootless with only a passport to call home. Dear Matefele Benam, don't cry. Mommy promises you no one will come and devour you. No greedy whale of a company sharking through political seas. No backwater bullying of businesses with broken morals. No blindfolded bureaucracies gonna push this mother ocean over the edge. No one's drowning, baby. No one's moving. No one's losing their homeland. No one's becoming a climate change refugee. Or should I say, no one else. To the Carteret Islanders of Papua New Guinea and to the Taro Islanders of Fiji, I take this moment to apologize to you. We are drawing the line here because we, baby, are going to fight. Your mommy, daddy, bubu, jima, your country, and your president too, we will all fight. And even though there are those hidden behind platinum titles who like to pretend that we don't exist, who like to pretend that the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, Kiribati, Maldives, Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, floods of Algeria, Colombia, Pakistan, and all the hurricanes, earthquakes, and tidal waves didn't exist? Still, there are those who see us. Hands reaching out, fists raising up, banners unfurling, megaphones booming, and we are canoes blocking coal ships. We are the radiance of solar villages. We are the fresh, clean soil of the farmers' past. We are teenagers, blooming petitions. We are families, biking, recycling, reusing, engineers building, dreaming, designing, artists painting, dancing, writing, and we are spreading the word. And there are thousands out on the streets, marching hand in hand, chanting for change now. And they're marching for you, baby. They're marching for us, because we deserve to do more than just survive. We deserve to thrive. Dear Mata Felipinum, you are eyes heavy with drowsy weight. So just close those eyes and sleep in peace. Because we won't let you down. You'll see.
Wow. Wasn't that great? You know, Steve, for those that are coming in a little bit late, that was a poem by Kathy. I can't pronounce her middle and last name. It's kind of strange. I'll get it straight, though. We may have her on the show next week or the week after if we can work out the situation. She's in the Marshall Islands, which are very, very far in the Pacific, and I'd like to get her on to get an update from her. So I'm sure she's got a lot of reaction from some of the UN officials, some of the big shots, and people that are doing all this, the voting and different countries, because she's fighting not just for her country, but for the whole world. And she mentioned a number of countries that are right near her that are all going through all sorts of climate change. In fact, her island, Steve, the Marshall Islands are sinking, and the ocean is rising. And there's people saying that if we don't do something quickly, that country's going down in a number of years. So the thing, this is why she's so concerned. And this young woman's going to be a great, great leader, speaker, activist, whatever you want to call her. Now, let's get, Steve, let's get to talking about the UN event. And once again, I'm Bobby Elias. This is Let's Create a Better World. I'm speaking to Steve Hertz, senior attorney at the Sierra Club. And we're talking about the protests, the march, climate change, what we can do about it. That's what we're going to talk about today. First thing, the event, we've heard 300,000, I've heard 400,000 people were there all over New York City marching, demonstrating, and being there in Central Park where they had great, great speeches and great leaders. It was really a big day. Tell us, Steve, your reaction to the protests, what you can tell our listeners about it, please.
Sure, Bobby. So first I would say that I, too, was really moved by the poem, as was the presidents and prime ministers that were in attendance. She spoke at the opening ceremonies for the UN Climate Summit, and so she had an audience of world leaders. And as you mentioned, she brought them to their feet with applause. So it was extremely moving, and she is really a new voice for the climate movement. What I found probably most amazing about the poem was that she was able to describe in very human terms the stakes for her people, who, because of sea level rise, really are on the front lines of climate change, and at the same time call out those who would impede progress, and yet remain hopeful. And the source of her hope was her faith in the power of ordinary people to force their leaders to take action. And really, that's what the People's Climate March was all about. So as you mentioned, there were about 400,000 people in the streets of New York on the Sunday before the UN Climate Summit. And those people came from all walks of life. It was an extremely diverse coalition, not limited to traditional environmentalists. You had union members, you had people of color, you had community groups, and most powerfully, you had people from communities in New York who were affected by Superstorm Sandy. And they were all marching together, demanding bold climate action. So it was a really powerful political moment for calling for climate action. And what was really interesting is that 2 days later at the UN Climate Summit, when President Obama spoke, he mentioned the march and specifically referred to hundreds of thousands of people in the streets calling for their leaders to act, as did other world leaders. So we think it'll really have an effect in changing the political context for climate decision making.
Wow, that's great. And then let's talk about the UN summit, what you know about it, what you think about it. Personally, I'm glad that there were these 400,000 people, you know, demonstrations, marches. Even Obama has said, like many presidents before him, if you want me to do something, make me do it. In other words, get a big demonstration, do something big to get the attention of the whole country, and then he's going to have me forced to do it. So 400,000 people marching, demonstrating, and going through all the, they went to Wall Street on Monday, the day after, on the 22nd of September, the day after the big march, and they protested there too. So there's a lot going on, but I'd like your reaction on the UN summit as a whole, what happened and what you think is going to happen in the future, what the Sierra Club is doing, et cetera. Take your time.
Okay, so the march was on Sunday, and then 2 days, and it was timed to coincide with the UN Climate Summit. And for your listeners who may not be familiar with it, the UN Climate Summit was a meeting called by the United Nations Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, of world leaders to come together and try to identify places where we can show momentum towards more ambitious climate action. So it was not intended to sort of resolve every issue. It was not intended to be a negotiating session for the UN climate treaty, but just a time for leaders to come together, share what they're doing, make bold pledges, make new announcements, and to show momentum. And on the side, they also had a bunch of meetings of various sectors where groups of governments and cities and private sector actors could also make announcements about things they're doing within their spheres of influence. So with that somewhat limited objective in mind, I think you'd have to say that the climate summit was a big success. We saw some very useful, very hopeful announcements coming from governments. So for example, there's been concern in the United States that China, that even if the United States put forward an ambitious pledge, China wouldn't. Well, one of the senior leaders of China came and he said that in early 2015, they will put forward a pledge to reduce their emissions and that they'll seek to peak their overall emissions as soon as possible. And coupled with recent news that China's just voracious appetite for coal may be waning, that raised the real possibility that China will be able to peak its emissions much earlier than previously expected, which would be a huge deal for the global effort to address climate change. Just to cite a couple other examples, Denmark announced that it'll be powered exclusively by renewable energy by 2035. France announced that it would give $1 billion to the new Green Climate Fund, which I mentioned earlier is a United Nations-sponsored fund, which is designed to help developing countries reduce their emissions and make themselves more resilient to climate change. And then Germany announced that it'll no longer use its development assistance to fund overseas coal projects, which ends an important global source of public subsidy for coal projects. So taken together, these are not sufficient, but it's certainly useful to show momentum and to show that countries are taking action.
Wow, there are good results with 400,000 people and the protest, as big as it was. There are changes going on, and we're going to talk more about that in the next week or two. In fact, I think, for those listeners coming in right now, that is Steve Hertz, who we just heard. He's a senior attorney with the Sierra Club, working on some climate change programs that we're going to get into in a few minutes. But I'm Bobby Elias. This is Let's Create a Better World. The title of this show is To Create a Better World, and that's what we're trying to do with this particular show also, and we want to educate people on what to do. But I wanted to change the topic just a little and get into the climate change as a whole and what the Sierra Club is doing, what you're doing, any of those items at all. Go ahead, Steve.
Sure. Well, I'll talk a little bit about the Sierra Club domestically and internationally. So domestically, the Sierra Club's committed to fighting for climate action from the ground up. So many of your listeners probably know of the Sierra Club as a big environmental group, but which we are. But at the heart, we're really a grassroots organization in the sense that we have dozens and dozens of local chapters around the country. And one of our big campaigns across those chapters is to fighting to phase out dirty coal projects, project by project across the country. So many of our local chapters working in coalition with community groups in their neighborhoods are working together to phase out the local coal plant and not only to reap the climate benefits of that, but more importantly for local groups to gain the public health benefits of reducing local pollution. And so so collectively, those efforts have not only stopped a number, hundreds of coal projects that were on the drawing boards, but have also forced their operators to agree to phase out existing coal plants. And they've made a huge dent in the emissions of the country. So that's one of the big, that Beyond Coal campaign is one of the big things we're doing domestically to address climate. We're also doing a number of things internationally. So again, with regard to coal, we're trying to take that fight international. We're working to end public support for coal projects internationally, and we're helping to transfer some of the lessons that we've learned from the domestic coal fights to local partners in developing countries who are opposing dirty coal projects in their own backyards.
That's great. Sierra Club does a lot of great work, and you've got chapters all over the country, and we're going to give your information out at the end of the show. But I wanted to also talk about internationally what's going on with what the Sierra Club is doing, and just in general, what's going on around the world that you know of, and how are we tied up to it? Just give me a little world report, if you could, please.
Yeah, a little world report. So, well, as I mentioned earlier, the climate summit was intended to show progress towards the UN climate negotiations. So, as many of your listeners may know, that there's an agreement to reach a new international climate treaty or convention or some sort of agreement. It's not yet decided what form it will be in Paris at the end of 2014. And that will establish what countries will do collectively and individually in terms of reducing their emissions between now and the middle of the next century, 2025, or perhaps 2030. So countries will come forward with their pledges and tell the international community what they will do to reduce their emissions at home, and what sorts of, and developed countries will also say what sort of money they'll put forward to help developing countries take action. So that is the big item on the international climate agenda over the next 15 months.
Great, great. You know, one thing, I talk to a lot of activists and people that are concerned on these issues, and what China did was to promise to make their change in 2015, which is next year. In fact, it's a few months away. Some of these countries, 2035, 2050, that's a long ways away. And I know a lot of people that are activists that are saying that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be around at that time. And besides, it's just a long-range promise that we need action sooner and better. Your thoughts on that, Steve?
Well, the expectation is that countries will come forward and say what they're going to do in the short term. So coming out of the last big international negotiation in Copenhagen in 2009, countries said what they would do through 2020. And this negotiation is mostly about what they will do after 2020 and through 2020 through 2025 or 2030. So it's not about delaying action out to the middle of the century. That clearly won't be acceptable. It's more about putting forward the next phase of pledges. And the big question is going to be if those pledges are not adequate to meet the agreed global goal, which is keeping aggregate warming below 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, then how countries can be incentivized to take greater action and to ramp up their pledges so that collectively we can stay on the trajectory to stay below 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's great. Steve, I'd like you to tell people about what you do as an attorney. I know you're working on a special international climate program. Tell us about that and other things that you do and about your work and all these issues.
Sure. Well, let me just take one example. I do a lot of work advocating for the Green Climate Fund, which, as I mentioned, is a new fund created by the United Nations that is expected to be one of the primary channels for developed countries to deliver money to developing countries to help them take climate action. And it was agreed to be started back in Copenhagen and believe it or not, 5 years ago. And they still are finalizing the details for what sort of projects they will prioritize and what their objectives will be. But they're now at the point where they're where countries are pledging and promising to put money into it so that they can receive those contributions and begin to disperse money next year. And so at the end of November, they'll have a donor conference where countries will pledge money, and we'll have a good sense of how much money the Green Climate Fund will have going forward. A number of countries have already made substantial contributions. As I mentioned before, France put $1 billion, or committed to put $1 billion.
Make a call.
Fund.
Please hang up and try.
Please excuse the noise, Steve. You keep going.
Okay.
Going on for a while.
Sorry, I was just saying France committed to put $1 billion into the fund, and Germany committed to put $1 billion in as well. And the rest of the major donors will commit by the, including the United States, will commit by the end of November.
Okay, Steve, what's your goal, or what would you like to see happen specifically, your thoughts, your dream, your goal as to what you and the Sierra Club and people in general, what can we do, all of us, starting with yourself and the Sierra Club, to make this a better world and to make change?
So I would return to the poem we discussed at the outset and encourage your listeners to think about what they can do to force leaders at all levels of government, whether it's local, state, or national, to take decisive action. Because it really is going to take action from all levels of government, all segments of society, to address this problem, because it is so comprehensive. You know, one specific thing that people can do is, as your listeners may know, the Environmental Protection Agency came out with a draft proposal for a clean power plan, which would reduce emissions from the power sector. And they're now in the process of taking public comments on that plan. And the Sierra Club would like to see it strengthened. So one thing folks can do is to weigh in with the EPA and demand that it strengthened so that the EPA can put in common sense regulations that will accelerate the reductions in emissions from the power sector. And listeners can go to our website. It's www.sierraclub.org and can get more information about the Clean Power Plan and how they can take action.
That's great. Well, Steve, I want to give you two or three or four minutes for final thoughts, but first, clearly give any other contact information on how people can join the Sierra Club or ask questions or call a group in their area. What can they do? And please read that information slowly, please.
Sure. So as I mentioned, you can go to our website. It's www.sierraclub.org. That's SIERRACLUB.org, and it's all one word. And there you can find information about the full range of work that we do, both climate-related and not climate-related. And through the website, you can take action nationally, but you can also find the contact information for your local chapter and get involved in local issues.
Okay, very good. All right, take 3 or 4 minutes, and if you'd like, and whatever time you want to give to us, your final thoughts on, and my final thoughts are to tell people, take action. My final thoughts are to tell the listeners to go to a meeting, join the Sierra Club, join another organization, be an activist. Support the people that are doing all these things to change, to make change in the climate. It's a big battle, and we can win, and we will win. If you heard that poem, you saw the spark and the belief in that young lady that gave that poem. And one more thing about that young lady. We're going to try to get her in the next week or two on this show. Read the poem once more and ask her what's happened since that time that she was on. What world leaders promised her? Is she going to work with these people? I'm sure she was so great. I'm sure she got some reactions, people. But your thoughts and final thoughts on just in general, what people can do and what do you think about all these things that are going on? It's your forum for 3 or 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think I've given people information on how they can take action through the Sierra Club. The key thing is to get involved and take action. But maybe it's worth touching on something else that came out of the UN Climate Summit. So you know, Bobby, that there's always this counter-argument to aggressive climate action, that taking action will be ruinously expensive, that it will cost us jobs, that it will limit our economic prosperity. And one of the really interesting things that came out of the march and the summit is that I think that argument was demolished in a number of ways. So first, you know, we saw thousands and thousands of union members marching for climate action because they know that the transition to a clean economy is going to create millions of high-paying American jobs. They'll be building wind turbines and installing solar panels and upgrading efficiency, all jobs that have to be done in the United States and can't be outsourced. So they see the transition to a clean energy economy as an enormous opportunity. And then second, from the business community, we saw a number of business leaders stepping forward with initiatives to address climate within their own spheres of influence, their own supply chains and business areas. So a couple of examples, we saw a number of Wall Street companies announce new finance vehicles for clean energy, we saw so producers of palm oil commit to source their products in ways that will not contribute to global deforestation. Both really important steps forward. And so these aren't enough by themselves, but what's really clear is that responsible business leaders are seeing the imperative, and they're seeing the business opportunity to act. And it's really only the regressive elements of the business community that still don't get it and are impeding progress at the political level. So I think one of the really important messages that came out of the Climate Week was that the argument that climate action is too expensive or contrary to our economic interests has been exposed as a red herring.
Oh, that's great, Steve. Steve, you've been wonderful. I really admire all the work that you're doing, the Sierra Club is doing, and what we can look for in the future from groups like yours, Sierra Club, and fighting this climate change system. There's so many parts that are just really in major problems in this world. So, again, thank you very, very much, Steve, for coming on the show, okay?
Thanks, Bobby. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And I'm going to stay in touch with Steve and the Sierra Club. That's another outlet. I've had this show for over a year, and I'm building up great, great resources around the world, and I want to make this one of the best shows on the planet. And it is already in that category, I'm told by many listeners. Let me give you my phone number for all the listeners out there. To reach me if you have any ideas or comments or want to know about the future for these shows. You can call me at 323-770-1925. I'm going to give that number at the very end again. That was Steve of the Hertz of the Sierra Club. He's a senior attorney. And we're going to have another gentleman on to discuss the poem, the UN Summit, Climate Change and Activism. And he is going to also, along with myself, encourage you to do something in this world. Don't just sit around and eat, sleep, and do, you know, eat pizza and watch the ball games. Let's live a better life. Let's do something for our family, for our friends, and for the planet. That's what the show is about. The show is also about healthy aging. Anyone over 27, 28 is aging, I'm sorry to say. But we can reverse it. We can hold it back. And we're going to talk about stem cells, the future of that. We'll talk about all the different lasers that are out there that are coming bigger and bigger. A Mediterranean diet we're going to talk about. I'm going to have guests to talk about healthy aging in all the different categories. I listed 25 different categories that myself and a lady named Dr. Sarah Larson spoke about on two different shows on this show. So stay tuned to us. And also, for those of you that might not be near your computer or laptop, I'm going to give you a number that you can call, and you can hear the show on your phone, area 712-432-7231. One more time, 712-432-7231. And now my number one more time, so if you want to reach me for ideas and thoughts and prospective guests for the show, but they've got to be really good and unique. We want stories that are different and better than anything else. My number, 323-770-1925. My name is Bobby Elias. Okay, I believe our second guest is on the line now. He and I are going to talk about what's going on in activism, what's going on with the recent protests in New York, and other things. And we're trying to motivate you to take action, do something. Let's see if our guest, Brandy Christen. Brandy, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bobby, but I unfortunately did not hear the poem aspect of the show because I kind of called in. I had some trouble calling in, but I can definitely speak to a lot of the things that you've been talking about, so I'm ready. Throw anything you want at me.
Okay. No problem. That's all right. We're going to have the poem and hopefully the young lady on again. We're going to try to get that young lady on our show next week or the week after. We're doing our best to do it. She's a long ways away, and it's difficult to call on the phone, but we're going to do that. And I do enjoy having you on, Brandy. For the listeners listening, I met Brandy at a big event, and he was speaking, and he resonated with me because it's almost like hearing myself. He and I agree on quite a few issues on making this a better world, on what people can do as activists, et cetera. But just give me your thoughts first, Brandy, on what you thought of the big protests in New York and the UN summit demonstrations and what activists are doing around the country.
Well, sure. Like, as far as the poem there in the UN presentation, that reminds me a lot of this young girl named Severin Suzuki, who spoke in 1992, I think it was, who spoke to the Earth Summit, UN Earth Summit, and just an amazing call out. I did not hear the poem, but just it's an amazing thing to see these people, younger people especially, giving these amazing, profound call outs to the UN establishment, which really does nothing and is there to protect the money interests of the major powers, which that's the whole basis.
Can you speak a little louder into the phone, please?
Sure. UN is just there to simply protect the interests and to abide the money interests of the major establishments and major powers throughout the world. What else do we expect? But, these people who run the UN and who interact with it are people too. So to have someone just profoundly give, an artistic expression of a poem dramatically reaches people, I think, a little bit differently than it would have if it was a presentation with a PowerPoint, intellectualized, criticism of the current system. I think art has a powerful way of reaching people beyond their assumptions and beyond the beliefs that they kind of hold close to them as they walk and interact in their day. I think art is a way of dramatizing and giving identity to our times and to the state of the world and giving a vision for the future. So I think art has definitely just as much a role as the intellectual approach does to social change. I think the two are very much intertwined. I mean, at the end of the day, art is essentially, creativity and experimentation and creating identity and drama. So I think it very much intertwines with social change. Martin Luther King and all the great speakers of the past have definitely dramatized and utilized artistic expression throughout their work. But as far as the New York, the protests happening over there, it's just another, it's a good sign that we continue to see these protests and these mass gatherings happening over the issues of today. It's not to mean that we should let the established order, the social order, get away with. I think it's good that people are caring and they do want to see change happen. That's a really good sign to me. Of course, a lot of the protests are a little bit fall a little bit short of the deeper issues, meaning the deeper issue goes beyond, I think, the surface behaviors of what we see in the world, beyond the socially offensive acts, the corruption, the everything that they're not doing to right this world and environmentally, socially, personally, workers' rights, human rights, animal rights, just health, a lot of basic issues. It goes deeper to the very basis of our economic system, the very basis of the social architecture itself, which says that everyone must earn a living and everyone must sell themselves and must survive or else, and do it at any means possible or else you don't have a right to live, basically. But I'll let you chime in here. Is that kind of what you wanted to cover?
Yes, excellent. That's exactly right, Brandon. You're always on target, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
That's Brandon Christie. He is the local director, of Zeitquest, and we can get into that a little later at the end of the show, at the end of this segment at least. And there's activism going on all over the world. I mean, we talked about the New York and the UN summit there, but people were protesting all over the world. There were another 300,000 people in different cities around the world in concert with what was going on in New York. And we had in major cities and people all over. So this is great. Now, I'd just like to get your thoughts on the changes going on in activism, what's going on around the world, and is it progressing? Is it not? I have an idea, but I want to get your thoughts on that. Go ahead.
Well, we definitely want to see a continued expansion of movements. We want to see movements bloom outwardly. Of course, there's ebbs and flows, and anything that grows and expands, you want, there's levels or there's leveling off in any long process, and in any long growing process, there's always leveling off. So I would caution people to not be discouraged by any leveling off. It's a good thing that Not that I see that necessarily. I definitely see an expansion and leveling off. I think that leveling off at times is a sign of quality. We don't want a massive movement across the world that is irrational, hot-headed, emotionally charged, verbally, violent. Yes, people's emotions get into it, and that's a good thing that people do care and are passionate about making this a better world. But I think that we need a rational awakening, a focused, strategic, I know I'm throwing a lot of kind of words out there that I could go deeper into, but a strategic, focused, rational awakening, where a dynamic relationship can begin between the established order and not this dividing, this dividing kind of clash between law enforcement and the people. So, yes, I do see an expansion. Activism, like I think we talked about the other day, is totally changed now. It's looking past all the markers, all the usual signs of the problems we have. Really looking past that, of course, still addressing it and still providing relief for it, but looking past that to the deeper causal reason behind it all, which, again, is until the socioeconomic system, the market system, this advanced trade system of nations working against each other is addressed, nothing is going to change. I'm sorry to say that, but that's unfortunately the conclusion that is kind of drawn between from the Zeitgeist movement, our work, and many other activist institutions. So activism has very much changed now. As far as activism, I'll also say that there's an emerging, a growing common ground, I guess people call it, a common ground between all activist groups. I see it anyway, where you have these notions, these common notions of democracy, human rights. People want to see a sustainable economy come forward. People want to see people not just surviving but thriving. We have amazing potential as a species, and I think people want to see that come forward. And I think there's this emerging, like I said, common ground worldview that is emerging. And I think that's something that we can all be encouraged by and unify around. I think that though all activist groups, may take up different positions and take up different issues, that a common ground worldview is essential to develop if we're all to unify it as a holistic global Earth movement to see a new paradigm come forward. I think that's the kind of worldview, the global worldview, that's the kind of worldview that needs to come forward, a globally recognized worldview, and we need to establish a common ground throughout all classes, cultures, and activist groups.
Brandon, on this show called Let's Create a Better World and Healthy Aging, myself and guests we've talked about things that we can do to make this a better world. And one of the things that that I see, social media is a thing that's making the world smaller. More and more people can talk to other people on the Internet from different countries. Mm-hmm. They can write each other. And that's a good sign to me. In fact, the Arab Spring, three and a half years ago, all over the Middle East, the demonstrations and uplifting the dictators that were there, a lot of that work was done on the Internet. As a matter of fact, some of the countries had to find ways to stop anything on cell phones and even computers. So I see that as one of the things that is going to make a way for people all over the world, especially the younger people under 40, under 50, who are more and more on the Internet and social media. Mm-hmm. You've got all these different things, Facebook, you've got Instagram, you've got more and more things coming all the time. I'd like your take on that and how we can address people around the world to do some positive things, and also other ways that we can get people to join into a movement, into a group. Your thoughts?
Okay. Well, as far as social media, beyond just the obvious, being able to spontaneously organize out of social media, being able to share events, being able to share a worldwide decided day to protest or get out there and be present in your community, whether it's a worldwide protest, which we see more and more of, Occupy, the wave of action. These things are coming about more and more. So the world activist community, if you will, is beginning to get in touch and network and very easily, spontaneously mobilize, nonviolently, rationally throughout the entire world. And that's what I really am looking for. And what takes up my time a lot in the movement is developing that network, you know, developing that network of activist groups throughout Los Angeles, throughout California, and hopefully across the movement across the world to really get that infrastructure down. So, and meaning infrastructure down for activism and movement work, movement to permeate the culture, basically. That's what the whole point of a movement is to permeate, saturate the culture with these pro-social, pro-environment ideas to make these popularized and have the culture take hold of it in a way where maybe the movements that we see today aren't even in the front anymore. Now it's just the culture itself. This is the whole point. And really what, not to veer too much off of social media, but this is really what the zeitgeist movement really even means, which is to move or orient or drive culture, which that's what the word zeitgeist kind of means to me. It means culture or the times, the spirit of the vibe of the times, to move culture into a more pro-social atmosphere. So social media, beyond the obvious of being able to organize activism, I think it works at very subtle levels too. People can have conversations on there. People can, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and she was saying how she, you know, posts a lot on Facebook and just simple posts of research, different, technology that's coming out, different social issues, different, like I said, social research. Things have, I think, more of an effect than we realize as people see these, whether they comment or not. People do see these. It's a form of activism that is just so basic and so easy and permeable that it, I think it's, it can't be understated how much it does take its effect. People can comment, discussions are had, people see those discussions, those, and hopefully they are discussions and less debate. I don't really agree with the whole debating on Facebook or anywhere, or social media or anywhere else. I think discussions need to be had. And if one person is needs to update their view on something, or if someone is found, quote, wrong about something, then people should very openly and non-judgmentally just, you know, accept or update their views and not have to be like this this game or this kind of win or lose type thing. I think that's, you know, organizing your thoughts and your argument to basically win. I think that's the totally wrong angle. People need to kind of work together on that. But just to, do we have time to kind of describe the zeitgeist movement a little bit, or did you have another thing you want to throw at me?
Real quickly, if you could do that in 1 minute and then give your contact information after that. And then if I have more time, I'll give it to you. Go ahead.
Okay, well, the zeitgeist movement is a global sustainability advocacy group, and essentially that means we're a worldwide movement. Just, you know, and yes, we are another movement out there. there's so many activist groups doing good things. It's, the Zeitgeist movement is kind of an umbrella group. It really umbrellas all of the various areas of social change, environmentally conscious, earth conscious, human conscious type pursuits. You know, it's a scientific pursuit. We talk about human behavior, really gets to the root cause of why we see violence and crime and addiction and different social issues, why we see, you know, the environmental destruction, the corruption, really getting to the root of the issues. And also not just getting to the root, not just criticizing the current structure, but also showing a way forward, showing a remedy, a solution, a way of, so basically showing what's possible. And really, there is so much potential possible with our human species as a whole. And that's really what the movement tries to show. It highlights what's possible and then shows how those possibilities and all those awesome solutions that we see, all those ways forward are inherently restricted by the current social order. And until the current system of market competition and division and seeking advantage, you know, whether it's business or whatnot, until that system is addressed or modified and altered to be more in line with the natural world and what it demands for us to be sustainable and survive on this planet, you know, until it's altered and modified towards that, I'm sorry to say, but nothing is really going to make that much of an improvement. We're just going to kind of bounce along with a little tiny improvement. So something must give here. Anyways, my name is Brandon Christie. Last name is Kristy. We're just getting going. We're a small
not a small movement, but we're laying down infrastructure like anyone else. We're trying to get our basics down and do this the right way. We're not trying to strategize or do anything, any trickery right now. We're just a very straightforward public awareness movement, a lot of lectures and talks, public events type thing. And look us up at thezeitgeistmovement.com, and hopefully you can spell zeitgeist, Zeitgeist.
Good. Excellent. And my number's out. If people have any questions about that, they can call me. Listen, that's been great. Thank you for coming in. We were trying to get the young lady, Kathy, to be on the show today. We couldn't get her, but we're going to try to get her next week or two. Thanks for coming in as a last-minute sub. You've done it before, and I thank you again for that. And keep up the good work, Brandon.
Thanks, Bobby. You as well. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. All right. Let's get to ending the show. We've only got a minute or two, so let me just say that we're going to be doing more on healthy aging in the next coming weeks, stem cells, lasers, diet, exercise, meditation, how to go to sleep, how to lose weight. We're going to get into health big time for people that are aging, and everyone's aging if they're over 27, 28 years old. All right. I want to also give my number out again for people who want to call me for any more information, 323-770-1925. Let me thank the people that I want to give a last-minute thanks to our engineer, Jay. Great job, Jay. Thank you. To the Progressive Radio Network main producer, and that's Jason. Thank you, Jason. To our producer in Los Angeles, Jimmy D., our associate producer who did a whole lot of work this past week doing research, emails, and just preparing for more great, better speakers. And that's Steve Hassel. Thank you. Stuart Hassel, I'm sorry. And then I want to also thank our get-to guest today, Steve Hertz from the senior attorney for the Sierra Club, and Brandon Christie from Zeitgeist. And I want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in. Be sure to tune in again next week. Signing off, this is Bobby Elias of Let's Create a Better World, and we're going to go out with our song, We Are the World.
And the truth, you know love is all we need.